because when you're diagnosed with cancer, you feel like you don't have any control, and you just want to feel heard, and you want to feel like you have some control. So at least if everyone honors your choices and honors your wishes, that to me is like the best form of support.
Thanks for listening to the GOSH podcast. GOSH stands for the Gynecologic Oncology Sharing Hub, an open space for real and evidence-based discussions on gynecologic cancers. We'll share the stories of gynae cancer patients and survivors and hear from researchers and clinicians who are working behind the scenes to improve the lives of people with gynecologic cancers. Our podcast is produced and recorded on the traditional unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. It is produced by the Gynecologic Cancer Initiative, a province-wide initiative in British Columbia with a mission to accelerate transformative research and translational practice on the prevention, detection, treatment, and survivorship of gynecologic cancers.
Hi, I'm Nicole Kay.
And I'm Stephanie Lamb.
And you're listening to the GOSH podcast. So today we have Aman Jaswal, who was 29 years old when she was diagnosed with stage 2B glandular adenocarcinoma of the cervix in June 2019. Like many gynecologic cancers, Aman's was not detectable through a Pap test or blood work and was ultimately identified through a vaginal ultrasound followed by a biopsy. Today, she is 6 months cancer-free and here to share her journey with us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to see you.
Great. So why don't you just get started by telling us a little bit more about your journey with cervical cancer?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, I was diagnosed in June of last year. It was a really... obviously really shocking diagnosis at 29. You don't expect anyone to tell you that you have cancer. I didn't have any friends or family that around that age that had been diagnosed. So it was really a first for me and for anybody within my circle of people. Mm-hmm. So I think it was quite shocking, but it was also at that moment, I felt, I was overwhelmed with the idea of having cancer, but also very relieved because I had been in so much physical pain and having all of these symptoms. And really, I felt like, it just wasn't validated. I was trying to get, help from physicians for months and months to try to figure out what was wrong. And then finally, when someone told me, this is what's going on, a part of me was very relieved and hopeful because we were finally able to find a way forward. I was able to, see a small light at the end of the mm-hmm. tunnel. I think once you figure out what the problem is, regardless of how horrible it is, especially being told that you have cancer, it's kind of like, okay, well, at least we have somewhere to start. And I think that initially that was, most people are really... I don't know what other people's experience has been, but for me, the initial feeling was relief. It's like, okay, finally somebody's telling me I'm not crazy and also validating my pain.
Right.
So yeah, the pain really that you're important. In is, yeah. And that for me was huge. From the moment that I had a biopsy done and the gynecologist that did my biopsy, he validated my pain and he told me, we're pretty sure this looks like cancers to me, but we're going to confirm and get back to you within a week. We're expediting it. And, then me and him chatted a week later and, we got a confirmation and, it really got the ball rolling. And the one thing I can say is I feel really fortunate to have grown up in BC. The way that the process is, once you're diagnosed, it's really quick in how the ball gets rolling. Obviously getting MRIs, PET scans, that whole process is a waiting game. There's a lot of waiting time in between. That part was hard, but when you're trying to figure out what kind at that point from when you get a biopsy, then you have to figure out what kind is it. You have an understanding of where it is, but what kind of tumor is it? What's the grade? What's the staging? And that takes so much time. And that to me was a bit of a struggle But I was just so happy that we were going down the path of figuring out what's wrong. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I went to BC Cancer and met my oncologists, they were all so amazing and so supportive. I think feel like from the point that I was diagnosed, I felt nothing but support from every person that I came in contact with along my journey. So I just feel really fortunate that we have like a really good system in place here in BC in supporting people when they are diagnosed and through that whole process. And just even with the research and treatment options, because we don't have, what we have here, we don't really have in a lot of other places in the world. So that was one thing I was really fortunate about, or felt really fortunate about.
I guess
regarding my journey, being diagnosed with cancer is really hard. I think the initial feelings were obviously the fear came in. There was the relief side, but there was also the fear of just not knowing what was going to happen, not knowing where it was going to go, not knowing if the treatments would work. I found out that the cancer I had was very rare. I think we only had like over 200 diagnoses in BC of it ever. So that in itself doesn't provide like a ton of research mm-hmm. on the type of tumor. But luckily, the team that was treating me went based off of research that they found in other parts of the world to help in really figuring out my treatment plan. And I'm fortunate that they have those capabilities and access to that information to provide me like different chemos that they think could potentially work. It was a pretty straightforward plan from when I was diagnosed that like the options would be just radiation and chemo for the first leg of it. And then the second chemos that I was provided were more of experimental. I don't know if necessarily experimental is the right word, but they didn't know if it would work or not, but that it was an option for me to take. And I did that chemo, those two chemos more as a way to, for myself to know that, hey, I did everything within my power, for my conscious, like I did everything in my power to like make sure this is gone. And if it all works, then great. And you know, if it didn't, then hey, at least I did the best I could. It was more that. I think one thing I was worried about when I got diagnosed was I didn't know what I was going to be walking into when I was going to meet the oncology team. I really thought it was going to be like, I was going to be given two different options and they're both going to be really bad options and I'd have to choose the best of the worst.
Right.
But weirdly enough, like it was like, hey, this is the one road that we have of like how we want to treat you. And, do you want to jump on?
Right.
And that for me, it was kind of good because I was like, okay, I was worried that it was going to be, these are all your options and, mm-hmm. You really have to choose which way you want to go. So I was actually kind of happy about that. The unfortunate thing, but for also fortunate thing, was that with glandular cancer, you can't do surgery on it. You can't just cut it out because it's in your growth within the glands. So I think a part of me was kind of happy that I didn't have to have them cutting into me doing surgery. But also, the less options you have for treatment can kind of be worse too. So I don't know, I go back and forth on that because now that I'm on the other side of it, if it did come back, like that option's not going to be on the table for me. So I think that was one thing. So the only treatment option that they knew that would work was radiation. So because of that, I was given 25 rounds of external beam radiation, plus I did 4 rounds of internal radiation blasts. So that was like where they put you under. It's like a surgical procedure. So that was kind of interesting. The whole process of treatment was pretty interesting. Not what I didn't know anything about it. So walking into treatment, I'm not a big science person. So I was like really learning as I was going along and I asked a million questions and mm-hmm. everyone that I was in contact with, my oncologists were always so happy to answer all my questions. But I think the one thing I would always ask is this normal? And Dr. Lane would always tell me, none of this is normal. Nothing about this is normal.
No.
But within the circumstance, you know, me might expect this.
Right.
So it's kind of it was funny. And like, we always tried to keep things a little lighthearted when we could. But I feel like in the beginning of my treatment was probably the hardest. Starting chemo, I had a really hard time. My body just was not taking well to the chemo. I was on cisplatin, and I just couldn't keep any of my, the day one, it took me down. Like, I got treatment in the morning, and by night I was like throwing up, couldn't keep any of my anti-nauseas down, couldn't drink water, anything. And I was like fever, shaking, and I was like, oh my God, how am I going to do this for 4 weeks? I'm like, day one, I can't, I remember I was like crying to my mom and like, mom, I don't think I can do this. Like, how am I going to do this? But my understanding is like, I guess as a young person, chemo, from what my doctors explained, was that chemo hits you almost even much harder than somebody who's older because, you know, your body is quite active, your nervous system quite active, and chemo tends to attack your nervous system. So you're really having this internal struggle. So your body is kind of goes into a form of shock when you're, when you start down the chemo journey. So I think that's part of what was happening. And I spent 2 nights in the emergency. I had to go every day at night. I went there at Royal Columbian. And then I was admitted to BC Cancer, and they kept me there for about 5 days just to get me on a proper regimen that would work for my body, the anti-nauseas that would work for me. And once they got me on a good regimen and administered my next chemo, then I was finally able to come home and like do all my treatment from home. And I was really happy about that. Just being in your own bed, I think it is the one thing that you really want when you're going through
comfort.
comfort. But I think it was interesting because in the beginning I just didn't feel safe at home because I felt like nobody could help me.
Right.
Like my family felt like they couldn't do anything when I'm, you know, basically feel like I'm purging and like can't keep anything down. So at first I felt really safe, like when about being around doctors that could give me fluid, could give me actually administer anti-nausea through like IVs to kind of get my body under control. But I was so happy once we were able to figure out a regimen where I could be in a safe space at home and feel good being at home and handling the treatment from home. But yeah, there's a lot of different sides of I feel like the beginning of treatment. Before I got diagnosed with cancer, I never dealt with depression or anxiety or any of that kind of thing before. But once I was diagnosed, like I felt like the depression and anxiety became a part of my life during that time. And like, I think it was because of a lot of consistently being in like fight or flight mode when you're in treatment. And there was a lot of different sides of myself that I started to see. And it's just, you know, you're learning more about yourself, how you handle like real obstacle and what happens when you have to really start fighting for yourself. So in a weird way, I feel like it was a blessing having to go like learn that side of myself. But I don't know if I would want that pain ever again.
How did your family handle your diagnosis?
Oh, wow. So it's really interesting. When I, the day I was diagnosed, the day I found out, I got a biopsy done, and it took a week to get the results. So I found out, the gynecologist called me, and it was around maybe 3 or 4 o'clock in the day. And when I had found out about that, I told my parents. You know, I took a minute, actually, right when I found out, I cried. And, you know, I sat with myself for a couple minutes, and I really thought of, like, how do I want to do this? How do I want to go down this journey? And I made a couple decisions in those moments with myself. I decided, you know, I'm not going to go down this road from a victim mentality. Like, I want to do this. I want to do this from a positive space, but I never want to sit here and ever think, oh, why me? I don't want to go from that space. I'm like, this is just a piece of my story. This isn't going to define who I am, but this is a part of my story. And also I decided to set some boundaries in my life going down this journey. And one, because I come from a family of five children. I'm the youngest of five. And I'm an amazing family, like really supportive family. But one thing I wanted to make sure was, you know, when people love you, they can end up,
That's okay.
I think what I'm trying to say is, when people love you, they, and fear is involved. Like if someone's scared for you, then they might try to steer you into, doing something that you might not necessarily want to do, but, what they think is best for you. And I never wanted any of that. Like I decided, you know, I wanted everyone around me to respect my decisions, because at that point I didn't know what my treatment options were going to be. I didn't know any of that. I didn't know what my staging was going to be. So one thing I wanted was to make sure that I had full control over my decisions of what how I want to move forward, and for everyone around me to respect that, because regardless, I didn't know how sick I would get. And one thing I didn't want was to ever have to fight with anybody, because, you know, when people love you, they might try to fight for you by telling you what they think is best for you. And I never wanted any of that. So that was one thing within my family and my close friends, I just asked, you know, respect whatever I decide. You know, I'm in the right state of mind when I'm going through this. If, you know, however I decide to move forward through this whole journey, I just want everyone to, you know, be on board and to be positive. And if for any chance you can't honor either of those things, then maybe just, you know, distance yourself from my journey. And then, you know, that's like that. Those are my two big wishes, going through this. And I think having myself set those boundaries was really important. And I think everyone honoring that was really important to me, because it helped me create a safe space and helped me create like a positive space. And I think like even, and just like everyone just being supportive in the way that I needed. Because I think for me, a big thing was to feel, because when you're diagnosed with cancer, you feel like you don't have any control and you just want to feel heard and you want to feel like you have some control. So at least if everyone honors your choices and honors your wishes, that to me is like the best form of support. Mm-hmm. So that for me was a super important thing. But when I told that day, what was interesting was after I made that decision, I went and told my father and my mom, and I don't know. I was telling them was probably really hard, just because I know that they were trying to be supportive, but they were so scared hearing that, because they initially were like, no. When they found out about that I was having a biopsy, nothing's wrong. It's not going to be cancer. Like, I'm like, Dad, I'm pretty sure it is. Cause even the gynecologist told me it looks like it. So I'm like, if it is, I'm like, it's okay. And, they were both just really supportive. And, what happened was actually a couple hours later, my sister gave birth to my nephew. So my sister was in labor at that time. So it was a really interesting moment. Like my dad, I remember, like because he just found out this news about his daughter, and then he just had a grandbaby a couple hours later. And I remember me and him having a conversation, because I was like, Dad, this is a time to be happy. And he was like, I just can't be happy right now. He was like, I'm just so worried. And then we actually had a really good discussion about it, because one thing I told him, I was like, you're a man of faith. You believe in faith. And this is the time where, you know, you have to have faith. Whatever is going to happen is going to happen. It's like and this is a time of joy. Like, there's a new life coming into our lives. Let's focus on the joy. Mm-hmm. And I remember for me, it felt like it was such a full circle moment, getting the worst news in your life, but also getting such beautiful news, having a new life come into your world. It that kind of fueled me in a sense, because I focused on that joy and just meeting my new nephew. And just, we didn't tell my sister till a couple days later because she'd just given birth. But I told my other siblings, and it was a really interesting moment for me. But I think it helped me focus on just what matters in life. Mm-hmm. That day was really, it was something for sure. And
of emotions that day.
Yeah, it was a really overwhelming day. And it was, but at the same time, I was really glad. It felt like a blessing in disguise. Well, it was a blessing having like a new life brought into our family at that moment. It really, and just having a baby in the family at that time, where I was like going through a rough time, it just helped me focus on like something cute and something innocent and joyful. That was really, it meant a lot to me. So it's, which is so weird how the universe like works like that, how life works like that. So
how did you find talking about gynae cancer within, you know, your family or your circle of friends? Like, did you find that that was a bit of a taboo type topic? Were people comfortable? Were you comfortable, you know, sharing like symptoms and what was going on?
Well, I naturally, like, I'm one of those people, I'm just like, hey, I'm an open book, ask me whatever, I don't care. But I'm like, I feel like with my family, like my dad is 77 years old. Okay. My dad's older. My parents are originally from India. They came here in the 70s. So they've been here for a long time. But it was really interesting. Like, I never thought I would be talking so intimately about everything that's going on with my body. I didn't think I'd be telling my dad about my menstrual cycle or about clotting or, you know, this is what's going on. And, you know, I told them everything because I think when you get sick, like, you know, any of those uncomfortable conversations almost, well, for me anyway, for my family, they just kind of went out the window. It's more like, hey, we want to know what's going on. We want to make sure you're okay. You know, tell us what's going on. And one thing my dad had said when I was first diagnosed, he's like, I don't ever want you to feel like you need to hide anything from us. And I was like, Dad, I'm not going to hide anything. Don't worry. I think he was just worried that would, I think that scares you even more, thinking that somebody's trying to hide something because they don't want to hurt your feelings. Mm-hmm. And I said, I told him straight up, I was like, I'm going to be super transparent with you guys of everything that's going on. Like, and I don't want you guys, and I want you, like, vice versa, I want it to be that way when we're, because this is a scary journey. And it was just funny me trying to explain it to my mom, because my mom is in her 60s. Old, like, she's 60s. Oh crap, how old is she? 67, I think. 66, 67. It's around that age. See, my memory is not that great right now. That's a whole other thing.
Yes.
But my mom and my aunt, my two aunts. It was really funny because like they span between the ages of their 60s to their 80s. And it was really funny having to try to explain to them where the cancer is in my body, because they didn't really understand. They're like, what, like, whereabouts, like, is it going? Like, where in your cervix is it? And I remember just drawing them like an anatomy thing, being like, okay, so this is where it is. And like, this is what's going on. And I was trying to explain to them about, like, because I had this one issue within my, one of my fallopian tubes. So I was explaining that all to them. And yeah, it was kind of funny. Cause I felt like I was having a little anatomy class of saying, you know, this is like, cause at that point, that's like, you just want to, when something in your family is sick, you just want to know what's going on and understand it. And I feel like because of that, the taboo stuff just kind of, it goes out the window. You don't really care about that. But I do think that within the South Asian community as a whole, like I think the conversation around gynecological cancer and just around the reproductive system needs to be more open. And I think, I think even just gynecological cancer in general among people needs to be more open. I know with my girlfriends, we talked about it, but there was like some areas that I found that, you know, at first you might not feel like talking about, like, the word clotting is not a sexy word. That's not one word that people really want to talk about. But I find, like, the younger, like, girls in their younger 20s, their early 20s, might find it even more uncomfortable to talk about versus, like, going into your 30s. I felt like with my age group of friends, we were more comfortable talking about it more openly. But I found, like, I was talking to some of my nieces who were younger, and I think it was more like, oh, like, in their late teens into the early 20s, it was more like, oh, whoa. Kind of like that comfort isn't fully there, but I think that it's a conversation that we need to normalize within communities, because I think if you need to know what symptoms to look out for, what might be, you know, might be a red flag, and, you know, when to go see your doctor and mention to your doctor. And really, I think being informed gives you the information to really be able to advocate for yourself. And if you advocate for yourself, that's when you can really, it could be the difference between surviving and not surviving. And really that when it comes to cancer, it's like, there's a time clock on it. I know when I was diagnosed about 3 to 6 months before I would have been terminal. So I'm really lucky that it didn't spread. You know, and luckily my body was, I hate that it was in so much pain, but most women don't feel any pain. So and the fact that I was in so much pain is what pushed me to go get help and keep asking for help. So I think that's one thing within just even within the Asian community needs to be a more of open discussion, because at the end of the day, knowing what's wrong, it's like, it's going to be the difference between being able to save your own life and not. But even just us, I think among women in general, it's like a conversation I think we really need to normalize. And I don't think, you know, talking about things like, oh, discharge and clotting, like, it shouldn't be a bad discussion. I think it's just, it's your body. It's okay.
It happens to all of us.
Exactly. It happens to all of us. And if it's not, if it feels like it's out of the norm, hey, like, it's not, no one's going to shame you because of that. It's like, it's something to say, hey, I think this isn't right. And like, let's go ask for help. Cause I think when something doesn't feel right, it's almost like you think like you're doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, or I did something wrong, or that somebody's going to be like, oh my God, what's going on with her? Or you know?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. I think that, I'm hoping even just through discussions like this, and, I really want to do a lot more work with helping women and advocating and also normalizing the discussion around gynecological cancer. I think it's a really important thing that is needed within just within the community.
Were you aware of what the symptoms were of something like cervical cancer or any of the gynecologic cancers before you were diagnosed? Like, did you have maybe sort of any inkling that maybe this might be a cancer, or what did you think was happening?
I see. That's the thing. I felt like something was wrong. The thing was the amount. I was having so much bleeding, and I was having such weird discharge going on. And I felt like, and the pain, I felt like something like cancer, something was going on. And I was being told at first, oh, maybe it's just BV. Oh, a yeast infection. Oh, but that didn't really add up with all the symptoms. Like, this doesn't add up with all my symptoms. And then it was, oh, that might be endo, that you just have endo. And I was like, well, still, this just doesn't add up. Like, that's what I feel like. I'm happy that I was, you know, that I was able to, like, tell myself, no, this isn't right. Like, I need a real answer. I need something that's going to really tell me what's going on, or something that's going to relieve these symptoms, like, make them go away. So the fact that, like, I was able to kind of do that and fight for myself was really important. And the crazy thing was, like, what happened was I went to the emergency room and I talked to a resident. It was a resident that got the inkling of something that was wrong. Like, the minute she did my pelvic exam and she did the visual, she was like, oh, something isn't right here. And then she pulled up my vaginal ultrasound that I'd had a couple weeks before. And then that's when she was like, okay, I need to go send you for a biopsy. And boom, boom, boom. That's kind of where things started moving. So the fact that it took me to have to go to the emergency room for really to get the ball rolling was kind of wild. But I was really happy that I did that. And I was really happy that, you know, it was a resident, somebody that's learning to become a doctor, that saw that And because they don't do that extra work, and they're the ones who like are just learning about it, so they will go that extra mile to really try to figure out what's going on. And so in that sense, I felt like I was really fortunate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for joining us on the GOSH podcast. To learn more about the Gynecologic Cancer Initiative and our podcast, make sure to check out our website at gynecancerinitiative.ca.